Okay, thanks for coming. So let me start mentioning some plan. So first of all, plan for the workshop, as Ben said, this is kind of mostly for, say, mathematicians to help mathematicians to communicate better with physicists. So in particular, it means that we may need to assume some mathematical knowledge. So I'm going to do that. But again, feel free to ask questions. And this exercise session, as well as CA session, will hopefully help you to catch up. OK, so plan for this lecture series. So this lecture series is hopefully trying to hopefully explains what kind of thing QFT is. And what one can do with that as a mathematician, or so say for mathematicians. And one thing I want to emphasize is that things in this lecture series are kind of can be made completely rigorous and in principle in a sort of constructive way, although some technicalities are of course kind of the hidden modulus of the following caveat. So there is some. So let me see. Let me write things down and then maybe say a few words. So the thing I want to say is that this lecture series is going to work with the second column. So let me explain what I mean. So you know, we are going to explain things about QFT, and QFT has you know, people say something is about non-perturbative QFT, and there is another thing called perturbative QFT, and we are going to focus on that. Also, people care about some unitary structure, but we are going to focus on sort of complexified version in general. And people consider Lorentzian signature for your sort of space-time. We are going to focus on Euclidean. And finally, people think about sort of the space of states, like Hilbert space, but we are going to focus on sort of algebra of observers. That's the caveat. But I also want to sort of give some excuse to this choice. First of all, I think it's fair to say that even at the level of physics, there is no general framework for non-perturbative field theory. And another thing to say is that for mathematical applications, actually not every field theory is unitary. So it's kind of the general framework should be kind of developed without assuming that. And of course, we can try to fit this into the framework. Again, for most of applications, Euclidean field theory tend to be important. I mean, applications for mathematicians. And another thing we want to argue is that somehow this algebra of observers knows, in a sense, most of the important informations of QFT. So that's why we made this choice, and then we are. Yeah, this is sort of what we are going to do. Okay. Any question?
So typically in the physics world, I would think it would be
I think people consider states and observers both of them. Yeah.
If you could repeat questions, because the
Do we use this?
We weren't going to try that.
Okay. Right, so the question was to clarify like what physicists usually do. And physicists usually can consider like any of those things and maybe some kind of under some assumption they can try to understand this as well. But they really care about this unitary, which is about a reality condition. And also they care about a signature and Hilbert space of states. Huh? Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's right. So what I'm trying to say here is that I don't necessarily care about particular unitary structure, real structure, and I don't have any sort of the preferred time direction. That's all I mean here. Okay.
So you're excluding from the start a non-perturbative approach.
That's right. Oh, sorry. So the question is that if I actually do exclude non-perturbative stuff from the beginning, and the answer is yes. We are not going to say anything about that. We are trying to be like completely rigorous. So yes. I think some of these stuff are going to be discussed in other lectures, though. OK. And for today's talk, I'm going to explain the plan for today. I'm going to explain sort of a way to approach these theories following the BV formalism. And I'm just going to explain two sections, first classical BV and the second quantum BV formalism. And sort of what I want to convey today is kind of the simpler algebraic structures of algebraic structures that you need to expect from field theory. And to show that, I want to focus on zero-dimensional field theory. So I'm going to explain more about that. OK. So maybe I should start, even before getting there, what do I mean by field theory? So maybe let's start with this classical field theory. So for classical field theory, you have the following input data. You fix a manifold, which you think of as a space-time. And you think of some what is called the space of fields, which tend to be the space of sections of bundle over M. An action functioner. So by K, I mean the ground field, but let's say complex number C. So it is a functioner. So this is the input data. We care about classical field theory. And in a sense, the output of this is what is called the Great. what is called the critical locus. I'm going to give more examples soon, like this. And such equations are called Euler-Lagrange equation or equations of motion. So what I'm saying is that when you care about a classical system, you try to find three things, and then by computing this critical locus, you actually describe the system at the classical level. So let me give some examples. First, let's say free scalar field theory. In this case, I choose my spacetime manifold to be a d-dimensional Riemannian manifold. And space of fields to be smooth functions. And the action function is action function is just this particular form. Given this function, you try to write this down.
Does it matter whether you take C infinity functions or some more general class? Or
so we don't really care about that at the moment. In a sense, I didn't even start sort of my talk. I just want to give sense of like what I mean by field theory. So let's not worry about that for now. I mean, of course, you can sort of do those sorts of things, but. That's not, yeah. Yeah, I think the sort of the question or comment is like, isn't it better to work with some kind of thing so that actually this is defined or something, I guess? But we don't care about that at the moment. Right. Is it fine if I write it here? Is everyone okay? Great. Yeah, I noticed. And critical locus here. You know, if you have seen anything like this variational calculus, it's going to pick out such thing. Essentially, you just kind of replace one thing by some other field. So it's imposing this equation. So say when m is 0, by the way, m is for mass, you pick out harmonic functions. And somehow you think of that as describing classical, I mean, the system at the classical level. So people have been pointing out that it's not quite correct, and it's true, but it's fine for now. I'm not making any sort of the claim. I'm just kind of the repeating claims physicists may make, I think. I don't know. Kind of, yep. I'm just trying to give some idea of what kind of thing it is. So just to orient you toward what we do. By the way, maybe I should have said that when space-time is d-dimensional manifold, such field theory is kind of called the d-dimensional field theory. So scalar field theory, in this sense, is defined for d-dimensional manifold, so it's d-dimensional theory. Now, the next example is Chern-Simons theory, and my input data is 3 manifold. And I choose a simple Lie algebra and think of the one form valued in G. And action functioner is sending this. So I fix sort of the invariant pairing on this G, and that gives induced pairing on one form valued in G. So this makes sense. And then critical locus. Looks like solving this equation. And this is the curvature of this. I mean, what's the think of this A as giving a connection. This is curvature. So this is picking out exactly sort of the curvature zero connection, namely flat connections, also known as local systems. So these sorts of things we do. So this is how I claim what one cares about. Yes, I don't really. That's right. So again, sort of everything I've been saying so far, I don't pretend to be like absolutely precise and sort of the general thing one can actually do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So now I've given sort of the, I guess, the user perspective of classical field theory. Just solve this equation's motion, following sort of the, what is called the least action principle, I guess. But now I want to sort of the pick out some algebraic structures one should expect by focusing on zero-dimensional case. So from now on, I fix my manifold, space-time manifold, to be a point. And then I just want to kind of read off what structures do I have. And space of fields can be, I guess, anything, but tends to be finite dimensional. You know, the thing is that previously, even if I think of sort of the finite rank vector bundle, I would end up with infinite dimensional space. And that was kind of the part of the complication of field theory. So I want to take some finite dimensional thing. And let's say this is a manifold, OK. And I'm going to, so my action functioner now is just a function. That's right. Like manifold for me means finite dimensional manifold. Okay. So now I want to revisit this idea of classical field theory. So but in a sense following BV. So ClashScript was what is called the ClashScript BV formalism. But somehow from a modern perspective, this is nothing but trying to understand this in a derived way. So let me simplify what I mean. So note that critical locus of S, if you think about, because it is trying to solve this equation, you are trying to compute, say, the fiber product of the graph of the this one form as a section and then zero section. That's what you do. And as I said, the idea is to consider derived critical locus. And by that, I just mean that, you know, things are defined in terms of functions on that. Maybe first of all, if you consider functions on critical locus, given this, say, definition, sorry.
What's a fiber product? Is that something that you expect everyone to know?
Yes. So Tudor asked, like, what is a fiber product? And
as a graduate student in physics, I definitely would not have. But
like, really, even at the liberal set theory? Like, this is kind of the. So maybe let me write down. So I would say. I don't know, if you start asking questions about this, I think I'm going to have trouble. Like, it's
like
it's going to get a lot harder than this, actually, just to give you a warning. There is going to be much of like homological algebra and so on. Like, basically, we are assuming kind of the quite a bit amount of mathematics. So this is mostly for sort of, say, I don't know, the talks are mostly for, say, advanced graduate students and research mathematicians or something. And TA sessions and exercise sessions is going to help you sort of to catch up if you are not one of them. Right, so, I don't know, yeah. Well, in a sense, by definition, this is given by this fiber product. And again, by definition, functions on this critical locus is given by tensor product. But what I want to say is that because its name is derived critical locus, we just kind of put D here and derive this tensor product. So what do we get? So one of the exercises is going to ask you to identify what it is in a sort of the explicit way. So let me exercise this critical locus same as functions on so part of the exercise is maybe to make sense of this, but let me help you a little bit now. So what I mean by that, for the special case when S is zero, I want to sort of the, sorry, which O? D? this O functions, spatial functions. Oh, this one, not as curly. So, say smooth functions. Maybe things work just as fine for, say, affine variety, but let's say smooth manifold and smooth functions. So, special case. When S is zero, which you'd never consider if you're, just kind of working in the naive way. You know, action function being zero, you don't usually consider that. But I just want you to give an idea of what kind of thing this is. So derived tensor product, you need to find a resolution. And resolution over these functions on cotangent bundle. And the resolution, this is called the Kozul resolution. You can find this resolution with the differential coming from the identity map. So you may want to write this in, I don't know. This way. This is called the Kozul resolution. But yeah, the next, yeah, I'm going to do that. Yeah. Right. I didn't need it yet, and I'm going to talk about it yet. Right. So once you notice that, replacing this OX by this thing, and you can cancel out, say, functions on T star X with this vector. So you'd end up with because of this resolution, you end up with this. And this is, by definition, functions on, I called minus unshifted cotangent bundle. And exercises to understand this a little better, and then even with non-trivial S. Okay. So the next thing I want to say is that, as Ben pointed out, this has slightly different way of looking at it, which is as a polyvector fit. So like this. So what I'm trying to say is that a symmetric algebra of tangent bundle, once shifted, becomes exterior algebra. And if you keep track of cohomological degree, this is what you're going to get. So this is what is called the polyvector fields. Yeah. Right, right. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Yeah. Okay. And now I want to observe some structures this thing has. That's what we wanted to do, right? We start with sort of the initial data of field theory in this simple setting, and we want to observe like what it actually has. One thing to notice is it has what is called the Schottan linear bracket. So if I write this down as directional PVK, so each piece is sort of the matching up, then for psi 1, psi 2, PV 1, and say FG, PV 0, which is usual function. So this bracket is defined the following way. For vector fields, it's a usual bracket. And vector field and function is a derivation, and functions do commute. And then you can just extend this by Leibniz rule. So by definition, it is defining a Poisson bracket. Then this is giving a Poisson bracket of cohomological degree 1, right? If you keep track of this cohomological degree here, you'd end up with this statement. Okay. Sorry? So I'm going to say. So the second exercise in my exercise sheet is exactly to answer that question. The question was like, what's the relation between this description and this Poisson bracket? And the claim is that this minus one shift is symplectic structure, which you are going to think about in the exercise. It's what's responsible for this Poisson bracket of cohomological degree 1. So you know Poisson bracket is the inverse, so that's why your minus one shiftedness is becoming one shifted now. And also in the exercise, I mean, you don't even need exercise, I guess, but under this identification and using this Poisson bracket, one can check. This operation of taking inner, what's the name for this? Inner product? No, that's not it. Contraction with ds is given by bracketing with this s, function s. So what did we get? Starting from this input data, zero dimensional like point, space time, and fields, manifold, and a function, what we get, so from the input data, what we've gotten is functions on minus one shift cotangent bundle and this differential there and a Poisson bracket. So I want to abstract some data out of here. So let's make a definition. A P0 algebra is a triple where AD is commutative differential gradient algebra and this is plus bracket. But these two structures to be compatible, needs to be compatible. So maybe let me write it there. So this is a, I will write this as a CDGA, and this is Poisson bracket. But this is the compatibility. And the claim is, of course, that this is a P0 algebra. That's how we can motivate the definition. So compatibility is kind of obvious if you think of a differential in this way because of the, what is it called? Jacobi identity, yes. Any questions? That's right. So, I should have said that. Thanks. So, as before, this Poisson bracket was degree one. And so, in axiom, I assume this Poisson bracket is degree, cohomological degree one. If I consider sort of P, say, sub D algebra, the degree would be 1 minus D, actually. Any question? Wow. I just finished like a seventh, and then I have spent half of time. Any questions, though? That's maybe more important. So let me just summarize again what happened. I started with the zero-dimensional field theory. Space-time is a point. Field is a manifold X. Action function is just a function. I just solved the critical locus, just as physicists do, but now in the derived way. Then I end up with this thing, with this structure. Differential, Poisson bracket, and this thing. And I just kind of make a definition such that the natural thing is an example of. That's what I did.
Yeah. It might be good to make some sort of comment about what kind of thing T star minus one X is.
Yeah, but polyvector field is not what kind of answer, what kind of thing do you want?
Well, it's not a manifold exactly.
I see. What kind of thing it is? I was kind of intentionally not. Yeah. This is what is called sort of the derived object. But in practice, it's not really that different in the sense that you just keep track of cohomological degree. So what you do with the vector space, now you do with the cochain complex, and just keep track of this cohomological degree. With say, now every functor is derived and so on, and then you end up with these sorts of objects. So formally, just write down the trying not to lose any information, then you'd end up with such object. And definition was kind of natural in the sense that, you know, what you write down functions on cotangent bundle, you'd write down symmetric algebra of the tangent bundle. Now with the shifting, you want to write down linear dual of the fiber, which is a one-shifted tangent bundle, and that's how you get this sort of definition. This is maybe another good thing to discuss during exercise session, I guess. I mean, like, some of the point of my exercises was that because I didn't quite assume familiarity with the derived geometry, a lot of exercises kind of to go through sort of basic computations there just to get some feel for that. Okay? Other question? So it's a polyvector field. So I don't know, like, depending on how you count, but given a smooth manifold, I do think of sort of the polyvector field, in particular sort of the sections of the vector, a tangent bundle, and so on. So it's kind of manageable, but right. No. I mean, like, I don't really care. Like, so, how to say? You know, sort of the functions on affine line. That's kind of infinite dimensional as a vector space. So yeah, even just as an algebra, I don't maybe get what you're asking. Typical example you should keep in mind is really kind of these polyvector fields. Question? Okay. Now, this was sort of, so far it was kind of the first subsection of the first section. And I have four subsections, and then I have another section about quantum BV. And the next thing I want to talk about is a little bit about gauge theory. So I'm not really going to talk about what I mean by gauge theory, but let me just kind of go straight to sort of the mathematically what kind of thing I want to do. So, you know, still, I want to work with M to be a sort of point, but now my X space of fields is like this. What is called the stack. Sometimes, for some reason, which I guess is going to be discussed, we want to work with such fields, such space of fields. And again, just like before, you know, classical BV formalism from a modern perspective, I said it's just kind of think of the critical locus in the derived way. Now, the idea, which is maybe going under the name of BRST construction, is try to understand this quotient in a derived way. So, but maybe before getting there, let me make an observation. So we are working with perturbation theory. And that means that It means that I work with a point in V. So if I think of this V as a vector space. So let's say 0 there. So what am I saying? This was sort of the space of fields, but you can think of this also as sort of the sort of solutions to equations motion. And picking a point here means that I just decided to work near that point, do perturbation theory near that point. This idea may sound strange to physicists. They think of this perturbation theory maybe for like quantum theory only. But even at the classical level, I want to make this choice. So let's say that, it is assumed, yes. So, right. So, in particular, when I say functions on V, I mean things that can be seen near the point, so sort of the power series, so completed symmetric algebra. You know, V star is understood as a linear function. And you can essentially this formal information is just about the Lie algebra of the group. So I'm going to replace this group G by the Lie algebra G. So as before, to understand what we are after, we need to think of a space of functions. We will be thinking of G invariant functions on V. And we'll be thinking of this. So invariant functions. But again, just like before, now I have kind of the room to do this derived functor visionist. And that's what we are going to do. So now, I don't know, I'm still going to write the same notation, but I'm going to use the derived functor. And a good model for this is given by what is called the Chevalier-Ellenberg Cochin complex. And again, there is exercise to get familiar with this sort of thing. Let me give sort of the basics. So given a module, I can define this object. So as a, you know, I need to describe this as a graded vector space and then give a differential. Graded vector space is given in this way. Starting with a Lie algebra, take a dual. So you may think of this as a and just as we have learned, some exterior algebra. But the differential is from you know, there are two natural structures you have, action of G on M and the Lie algebra on G. This is giving those natural map, and then again extend by by Leibniz. And such differential is called the Chevalier-Ellenberg differential. Huh? Oh, sorry. This is a module. Sorry, I just used the same notation. So for this talk, I want to forget about this M. M is on my notation for space-time manifold, but that's set to be point. And I just kind of, I don't know, recycle that notation because M is just good notation for everything. So let me say everything is a finite dimension. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So our interest was this, and as a graded vector space, this was just ensure functions on V, but functions on V is here. So I may as well write this as a right in this way, or in this way, and this certainly suggests that this looks like a functions on G shifted by one, there are some V. And this Chevalier-Ellenberg differential, if you think about it, it is a derivation of this product, namely this. Once you understand this space as a functions, this Chevalier-Ellenberg differential should be understood as a vector field. And let me use this notation for a vector field. But vector field with some property of cohomological degree one and squares to zero. Cohomological degree one is coming from this mean degree one, and square zero because this squares to zero. It just kind of introduces a different notation for this thing. Just try to think of everything in a geometric way. Yeah. Self-commute, but yeah, that's right. Okay. So let's see what happened. So the idea is that we started with this situation where this G is what is called the gauge symmetry. We just want you to understand such a case. Then what we have done is replace in this perturbative framework by this linear space. So whatever the gauge symmetry is, now I can think of that as giving another space of fields. So symmetry became fields with the price of this cohomological vector field. So as long as you keep track of this cohomological vector field, you understand the sort of same amount of information of this initial setting. Okay, so now the third part of the first section, and this is what is called the classical master equation. Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's exactly what I'm going to do now. Yeah, so that's right. Exactly. So now apply 2 to 1, the second subsection to first subsection. So what I mean is that, you know, think of t star minus 1 of x with this x v mod g. And this leads this expression where you have you can just write it down in this way. So, you know, I mean, everything in a sort of extended sense will play the role of fields, but they have a slight different name depending on the. I mean, it is usually called the Gauss field here and anti field. And this is anti Gauss. Then you can just sort of try to run the same thing. So, you know, O of E is O of T star minus 1 of X. The only sort of the thing to be careful here is that now there is there are two sources of differential. Or vector field. One from, say, subsection 1, one from the subsection 2. Right? So just given this, you have that. And you also have this Schwalley-Ellenberg differential understood as a vector field. And I'm going to abuse this notation to write down, you know, this was a vector field on the base x, but this now can be, you know, enhanced to be a symplectic vector field on the cotangent bundle, just like in usual symplectic geometry. And in this formal setting, symplectic vector field is Hamiltonian vector field. So you can write this as, you know, Hamiltonian form with for some Hamiltonian function as gauge. Now, the observation is that, by the way, again, I abuse notation to write S as a function here using proof back. So S was function on the base, but now I think of this S as a function of the cotangent bundle. You have these three. First of all, this is because S was originally defined as a function on the base, and the pairing is between base and the fiber. And this one, if you think about, it is because the action was defined on X. So it's kind of certainly kind of the preliminary symmetry. And this one is so because this vector field was commuting with itself. Yes, that's right. Exactly. So what I said was this. And in our setting, M is a point. F is x, which is assumed to be V mod G. So this F is V mod G, which means that it's a, that's how we set up the notation. Any other questions? No, I mean, it's not it. This is just coming from the action of this G on V. Given this action, that was what was responsible for this Chevalier-Ellenberg differential there, which was giving this vector field, which was giving this function as a Hamiltonian. It's not like a gauge fixing. Any other question? Yeah, and we are actually going to see example of the Chern-Simon theory, like really how it looks like. It's really, yeah, we'll get there. Okay, other questions? So, this seems to suggest that we introduce this combined object, say SBV, then we have SBV is kind of the Poisson commute with itself. I'm saying this because this is sort of the general form or axiomatics that we are going to use. So again, what I'm saying is that if you actually started with this kind of the gauge theory, namely with this, your field is kind of the, some stack, and you have an action, then you'd end up with things like this. So what am I saying? you still have this P0 algebra. Even for the gauge theory, you just have to combining the first subsection and the second subsection, you just get that. Okay. And for future reference, it is convenient to write this SPV as what is called a free term and interaction term. And this is sort of the degree 2. And this is a degree 3 or higher. The reason for that is that we write this. If, I mean, this may look kind of complicated, but maybe once you get to example, maybe it becomes clear. So this is the symplectic form of this minus one shifted thing. Then SPV just looks like Q plus that. So what I'm saying here is that this is a function, let's say polynomial function. Because it goes through this Hamiltonian vector field thing, quadratic function becomes linear vector field, and that's kind of, say, more special. So I just want to pick out that part really as a differential on the space of fields as opposed to, say, the entire space of functions. So that's why I wrote in this way. And writing down in this way is going to be pretty useful for anything we do. Okay. And the thing is that we want to axiomatize this a little bit better. So of course, in our setting, when we started with space of fields, which is of the sticky form, and then think of this, say, function there, or in other words, equivariant function, then we would end up with such a thing. But we want to have more room for that. And the idea is that you may want to start with, say, arbitrary minus unshifted symplectic space. So minus being a minus unshifted symplectic space, we are going to learn more about this in exercise, but space itself has this information of differential as part of the data. And minus unshifted symplectic structure gives this cohomological degree 1 Poisson bracket. So this we may as well take this as an input data and then try to produce sort of the field theory in the sense we are describing.
This is really a minus unshifted symplectic space equipped with a degree 1 vector.
Right, but in a sense, sort of the when I say space, I already may have that. But yeah. Sorry, so how to say? Minus unshifted symplectic space. This is going to give that. That's right.
So you're only, like, on a far away point, your definition of space was linear, right?
I see. Yeah, yeah, this is sort of the linear thing. No, this is derived, so how to say. So this is a derived, I just didn't want to say sort of the fancy word, but derived minus one shift thing. Functions on that has induced a derived one shifted Poisson thing. That's all I want to say. That's right.
And on the far right border, are you
so this Q was a in this setting, yes. Oh, that's yeah, sorry. Say it again?
Is human function I part of your data?
So this is a separate discussion. I just kind of ended this part here. And motivated by this, I'm going to make a definition. That's what I'm going to do.
So that you use that model thing?
That's right. So it's going to be kind of the related, but it's a separate discussion. So I should have made it clear. The setting I really have in mind is really this E is, say, minus one shifted on cotangent bundle of X, something like that. But if I had this linear thing, say, which may or may not be minus one shifted cotangent bundle of X, which we wrote down as a linear thing in degree minus 1, 0, 1, 2. Lie algebra with a vector space. I want to basically generalize this situation such that when E is this minus one shift cotangent bundle and this Q is this Q, I'm going to make a definition such that just like this before, I'm going to produce this P0 algebra thing. That's what we want to do. Yeah, I think I should have said that earlier.
Is Q on the right hand board the same as SPV?
No. So let's forget about this for now. Let me try to say kind of coherent things here and then relate that to this. Huh?
Assuming
what? Yes, I'm assuming linear. And the part of the claim is that, in a sense, this non-linearity is coming out of this interaction. Again, we are going to learn more about this in exercise, but let me write it. So let me make a definition. Functional I is set to satisfy classical master equation if QI if you have this. So if you started with this kind of linear space and have a, say, solution to classical master equation, what can we do? If I is a solution to classical master equation, then these functions on E will now this is again a Bezier algebra. And what I'm saying is that if you really start with sort of the usual way of thinking, say action functioner on this stacky thing, by thinking of, by writing down your differential or the your action functioner, this kind of the BV action functioner in this quadratic plus higher term, you can produce Q and I. And then with that, what you can show is that you are fitting in this setting, and then this I satisfies classical Maxwell equation. But what I'm trying to say is that although we came to consider this in a natural way, starting from sort of physical consideration in this simplest zero dimensional setting, you could just start with this setting, and then as long as you solve a classical Maxwell equation, you produce same sort of data. And as I said, like this Bezier algebra is sort of the setting we want to work with. We abstract to get from any kind of classical field theory. This is a more general way to produce such a thing. That's the point I wanted to make. Is it clear? Yes. That's right.
Formal completion at 1 point.
It's formal completion of one point, but certainly it does have a lot of structure. Like even in the previous case, this G dur, it does have a lot of structure. And let me maybe just get to, maybe I won't have any time for quantum theory today. I think Kevin can cover that and in this lecture. But let me just end with maybe the fourth subsection of the first section, which turns out to be the last section. That's right. Perturbative really means that I work with kind of formal neighborhood of something, some point. Yeah, that's right. But the part of the claim is that it does have a lot of information. And also you can try to do some work to see things in a family and so on, and then you can see more of the structure. But I really just am explaining just really the basic. Okay. So this part, of course, we've been just working with the zero-dimensional thing. So even to make sense of this in the, I'm not, again, pretending to be everything sort of the completely discussed. I just want to convey sort of the story. So what are we doing? So here, M is 3-manifold. And space of fields is G valued one forms. And we wrote down the formula for action functioner. Now I just want to kind of run sort of what we have learned with this example, at least make a claim.
Can
Okay. So the first thing to say is that this has what is called the gauge symmetry. Meaning that this functioner is actually defined on a step, not just kind of one form. So gauge symmetry is given by zero form. And let me, okay. Let me simplify a little bit and work with the abelian Lie algebra first, and then kind of the get back to sort of the higher thing. So by working with this, I'm really getting kind of linear thing. Then gauge symmetry, which was in our previous setting, the claim is that the gauge symmetry is encoded by the differential d there. Because if you know the usual story, your Lie algebra, so your one form factor is kind of contributing as a dx, and that's kind of exactly encoded by there. So this was kind of from the second section. And now sort of the BV construction. Sorry? That's right. So to be really clear, that's what I mean. So this was the Lie algebra. This was the V.
How is the omega 0 depend on G?
So when G is C, you can cut up the, you don't need to write. Yeah. Sorry. My handwriting is pretty terrible, so. So for now, work with G. And in a moment, we are going to work with non-trivial G. So now, in this setting, the idea was that I actually work with T star 1 of X. Sorry, maybe I should say that. This is coming from S gauge. Now, what I'm getting is omega 1, omega 2, omega 3. This is sort of the shifted cotangent fiber of the base. But now the claim is that there is additional differential, which is coming from the original action functional S. So what am I saying? Starting with our input data here, you run the argument for the gauge symmetry. You end up with this thing. Apparently, you should have some kind of differential coming from the gauge symmetry that's encoded in this way. Now you try to run the BV argument. You double the things. And now you should also add another differential, which is coming from this action functioner. And this D, as I claimed, is coming from this D. The quadratic part is contributing to this linear vector field. OK? Now, the claim. The claim is that for arbitrary G, you get a drum complex. But, you know, okay. Differential what? I actually have like 1 minute. Can I finish it and then maybe you can? Sorry. So I have 1 minute, but I started 5 minutes late or something. Right. So we need to encode this this data and maybe other gauge symmetry, which is present once we work with non-abelian, say simply algebra. And how do you encode that? Sorry. And of course, you can just say that it's bracketing with this SBV. That's a description. But I just want to make a remark to think about this. And maybe end with this. And certainly we can discuss more about this later, say in the afternoon. Let me just kind of give some sort of diagram. So classical field theory. Starting with the classical field theory, we pass to perturbative classical field theory. And the claim is that by thinking of this perturbative classical field theory, I was getting, let me write some technical terminology. I'll make some concrete claim later. What is called the formal moduli problem. And here, the corresponding thing is a derived critical locus. It's kind of a, and let me write down the example of the Stern-Simon theory. Starting from a classical field theory, if you actually have some say non-perturbative object, describe derived critical locus of a Stern-Simon theory would look like moduli space of local systems on M. But now, this is kind of picking up solution, and then look at sort of the nearby information. Let's pick a point P here, a particular flat connection. Then I'm looking at formal completion of this moduli space near the point. So geometrically, this is what we have been doing, except that I'm thinking of sort of the, maybe the trivial flat connection. But then, there is a pretty convenient way of looking at this formal moduli problem, which we'll discuss in exercise, called the Kozul duality. This is same as, say, DG Lie algebra, or L infinity algebra. And then, this just looks like in this case drum complex with a differential coming from the flat connection. A particular point here.
So P is not you're not like completing a
prime. Huh? Yeah. Okay, so where am I getting at? So we certainly had expression of this together with this kind of the, you know, nonlinear thing. But after shifting by one, so in a sense, this function is kind of given by shifting by one. And this function is, in a sense, sort of the Chevalier-Elmer coaching complex that we are going to study more. By shifting by one, now you have convenient way of writing down all the information you have in the classical field theory. So what am I saying? Now, in this expression, the action functioner, sort of BV action functioner, you can write in this way. Really look the same, but the claim is that now this lives on the entire space, not just kind of one form. So in particular, you are going to see terms like so if you write down term as x a check x check for ghost field anti fielding anti ghost, you are going to see terms like this. You are also going to see terms like this. This is the term coming from S gauge. And that is all encoded just by writing down this thing. In other words, writing down first shift by one and understand this as an L infinity algebra. That's all you need. Sort of this was the L1 part, the differential. This was kind of a bracket. And if you actually had like higher degree interaction term, say degree k, you're going to get k minus one bracket, higher bracket. OK, let me end here.